Google jumps into cloud gaming with Stadia, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey, Gadget here. You're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right. This is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, tap or click that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss a single episode. And if you've been around for a while, well, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Don't tell anybody else about this show. Now, I understand you're going to be like, well, Taylor, you've done 90 shows where you're telling all these people to go and tell other people about this show. Here's what I'm going to say to that. Yes, and at the same time, I don't know, I'm changing a couple things. I'm a guy who always likes testing out something and looking for the new thing, and I enjoy learning about the latest technology and things, but let's just keep this between me, you and me. Let's keep this show to ourselves. Don't tell anybody else, because more people are going to come in, and then more people are going to want to know about all this kind of stuff that you don't want to know about, and there's only certain things that you want to know about, and I want to know about, and share about, and a lot of other stuff going on, but not necessarily all the stuff that needs to be covered. You know, we want the cool stuff, like the latest happenings, interesting new tech, new games, you know, stuff like that. Now, obviously, we'll cover the popular stuff, some of which, too, that has been covered by other outlets. But, you know, this is like our hangout club, our house, our crib, as it were. I don't know. I'm trying to pull ideas out of sky, as it were. So, yeah, don't tell anybody. But it's not a secret. It's not something bad. It's just, well, we're exclusive, okay? So, you gotta have the hand stamp if you want entry. So, alright, well, I've been rambling on too much. I know that you guys are interested in playing some trivia. So, let's head on over. Alright, last episode, I asked, who purchased the very first Tesla Roadster? And I just checked right before recording this show, and sure enough, nobody got the answer right. Nobody even guessed. So, in case you're wondering, to up your trivia game, how many of you got the answer right? Raise your hand if you got the answer right. Oh, wait, I didn't give you the answer, did I? Okay, the answer to the question of who purchased the very first Tesla Roadster was Elon Musk. Yep, first one that came up off the production line went right to Elon Musk because he bought it. So, yeah, there you go, a little bit of trivia. So, if you guys are interested in playing along in trivia, here's how you do it. Submit your answer on Twitter by replying to the tweet with the question for today's trivia. The link to this tweet will also be listed in our show notes for this episode. This is episode number 91, or you can just head on over to twitter.com/technewsgadget. The first correct answer will be announced in the next episode along with your Twitter username. And I'll just say for distinguishment purposes, we use the hashtag LITNTrivia to distinguish the rest of our tweets between what's going on and actually the one that's the trivia. So if you get that one right, you win. Now, also, I'm thinking of adding, you know, something cool for us to do, like a t-shirt or maybe a coffee mug or something. So if you guys have your suggestions, you want to share them with us, feel free to let us know via email or Facebook or Twitter, available wherever you need to be. We'll be in touch. If you happen to hear any crying in the background, nothing really I can do about it. My almost 6-month-old daughter is throwing a fit and not wanting to go to sleep, but that's okay. So the question for today's episode is, what is the best-selling Call of Duty game of all time? So, what's your answer? Post it on Twitter with the hashtag LITNTrivia, or hit that reply button to the tweet, and the first correct answer will be announced in the next episode. Moving right along here, we're going to check out what happened today in tech history. Now, being that today is March 19th, 2019, on this day in 1972, Atanasoff was judged the official inventor of the computer. John Vincent Atanasoff, I'm really bad with names, emerges as victor from a protracted U.S. legal battle for the title of the inventor of the electronic digital computer. A judge determined his work had preceded and contributed to development of the ENIAC machine, whose inventors had previously been credited. So I guess he just took that and went, "You're the score, you suckers. See, I told you I invented a computer first, not this stupid little abacus thing." Anyways, you guys don't even probably know what an abacus is. I guess I'm dealing with that group. Anyways, an abacus is... Google it. Google it or YouTube it. You'll get all the answers you want. I'm not going to tell you guys here. But also, on this day in history, in 1986, the domains IBM.com and Sun.com come online. These domains are considered the 11th and 12th oldest domains in history. Still around to this day, too. I just checked, and IBM.com and Sun.com are still online and running quite good. So with that now out of the way, I'm going to catch myself before I trip over my own words and make an idiot. Let's head on over to today's tech news. All right, first up on a docket is NVIDIA's AI turns sketches into photorealistic landscapes in seconds. Now, in case you're wondering, audio listener, what is this photorealistic landscape that you're talking about? Well, we actually have video going on right now. So video, if you're listening to the audio, you're missing the whole other video part of it. We got images, videos. All the fun stuff. If you want more information or to watch the show, head on over to youtube.com/technewsgadget, or you can watch it on Facebook at any time, your leisure, facebook.com/technewsgadget as well. And, well, if you're watching this as a video and you're like, "Hey, is there a podcast available of this? I can just listen to the audio as I'm going about my day." Yep, you can do that as well. We're available on, let's see, Overcast, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, and iTunes, or Apple Podcasts, as they call it now. I'm sorry, I'm going to be stuck with iTunes for a while. So what we're looking at right now is a very simplistic paint sketch that then turned into a photorealistic landscape generated by AI. Remember how I was saying last episode about how AI is so underappreciated and how it's actually probably going to be one of the next big things in terms of moving technology forward into the future? Yeah, well, today at NVIDIA GTC 2019, the company unveiled a stunning image creator. Using generative adversarial networks, users of the software are, with just a few clicks, able to sketch images that are nearly photorealistic. The software will instantly turn a couple of lines into a gorgeous mountaintop sunset. This is MS Paint for the AI age. Called Gaogan, the software is just a demonstration of what's possible with NVIDIA's neural network platforms. It's designed to compile an image how a human would paint, with the goal of being to take a sketch and turn it into a photorealistic photo in seconds. In an early demo, it seems to work as advertised. And there's actually video that goes along with this, but we won't be watching the video. We're actually going to be watching the video for something else. So if you want to watch the video, you can actually head on over to the show notes for today's episode and enjoy. Gaogan has three tools: a paint bucket, pen, and pencil. At the bottom of the screen is a series of objects. Select a cloud object and draw a line with the pencil, and the software will produce a wisp of photorealistic clouds. But these are not image stamps. Gaogan produces results unique to the input. Draw a circle and fill it with the paint bucket, and the software will make puffy summer clouds. Users can use the input tools to draw the shape of a tree, and it will produce a tree. Draw a straight line and it'll produce a bare trunk. Draw a bulb at the top and the software will fill in with leaves protruding a full tree. Now, I actually wondered this myself, so what I did is I decided to draw a stick man in MS Paint, and that didn't work out. I was trying to draw myself because I'm not really good at drawing anything. The AI was like, "Man, you're too stupid to be drawn. You're not photorealistic enough." So I kind of left it at that. It seems like Gaogan looks really good. No, I'm kidding. I'm messing around with you guys. Seriously, don't take my word for it. Okay, this mainly seems to do really good landscape type images, not so much the people and animals and everything else, like nature landscapes. does really good at that. Galgan is also multimodal. If two users create the same sketch with the same settings, random numbers built into the project ensure that software creates different results. Now, in order to have real-time results, Galgan has to run on a Tensor computing platform. NVIDIA demonstrated the software on an RDX Titan GPU platform, which allowed it to produce results in real time. The operator of the demo was able to draw a line, and the software instantly produced results. So, however, stated that with some modifications, it can run on nearly any platform, including CPUs, though the results might take a few seconds to transfer over and display. But it's okay. Work in progress, and I'm liking it. Looks pretty nice. So, yeah, I'll leave the link, and you guys can watch the video and have fun. Next article has us looking at, does Facebook's executive shakeup signal the end of internet.org? Now, for those of you who don't know, internet.org was Mark Zuckerberg's ambitious plan to service the world with free web access. That obviously became stalled by a myriad of problems, and the company's latest personnel moves might be sidelining the initiative for good. Last Thursday, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced an executive shakeup at the company, which included a couple of major personnel moves. The most notable departure, Chris Cox, who is credited as being instrumental in a 2006 creation of the newsfeed, a public stream of posts that became one of Facebook's most significant updates and visible functions. In light of Zuckerberg's just-announced pivot towards privacy-minded measures like direct and encrypted messaging, the forecast for the newsfeed feature is decidedly cloudy, and so Cox is moving on. But it's the departure of Chris Daniels, another executive, that seems to cement the utter failure of a major Facebook project. I don't know if you guys knew about this, internet.org. It's much maligned Internet Accessibility Project. For those of you who don't know, internet.org was launched in 2013 and inspired by a previous manifesto about getting the entire world online. Daniels, part of Facebook's business development team, was enlisted to lead the charge. Zuckerberg's goal was to provide internet access to everyone, whether or not they could afford to pay for it. At launch, Zuckerberg said it would take 5 to 10 years for internet.org to cover the planet. He wanted Facebook to be that gateway to the internet. Now, in many ways, internet.org sounded like a nonprofit. It was intended for use in underdeveloped markets where access to the internet was either unavailable, prohibitively expensive, or too slow to be useful. Facebook forged early partnerships early on with countries like Pakistan and Indonesia, and touted its success in helping people in previously underserved regions access online healthcare services. By many accounts, it had the markings of a charitable organization, but rather than a gateway, internet.org started to feel a little more like a gatekeeper. For starters, it was headed by Daniels, whose job was not a part of Facebook's advocacy efforts, but rather to build the company's business and to maintain profitability. Simply put, Daniels' goal was to increase the number of Facebook users, a task internet.org was more than happy to accomplish. In order to receive internet access, those in need were first required to download the free Basics app from Facebook. Critics complained that internet.org worked by exploiting poor countries, and there was also the issue of censorship. Because Facebook operated as a pipeline to the internet for these users, it also became an arbiter of content in a way, and that's where you start really getting fuzzy with the line. Facebook said it chose to deny access to certain websites because of their data would overwhelm servers, so a lengthy list of internet advocates derided Facebook for restricting content. India, Facebook's most promising and public partner, backed out of the proposition entirely. Then internet.org stopped offering its services in Myanmar, following reports of the platform's role in spreading hate speech across the country. It pulled out of other developing nations, including Anguilla and El Salvador, around the same time as well. Now, what soon became clear was that many internet.org users were using it only to lower their internet bills, not to gain new access to the web. In short, the world saw through the internet.org veneer and identified the surface for what it really was, a business strategy headed by a Facebook biz dev guy that gave the social network even more control over how people experience the web. Now, it might be cynical to suggest that internet.org was intended to be a malicious bait and switch, more likely could be cited as another example of how even appearance of ideas at the company can morph into user acquisition schemes. So now there's a whole bunch of other problems going on. But 6 years after it launched, internet.org is seldom spoke of. Facebook hasn't issued a press release about Zuckerberg's passion project since 2015, and seemingly stopped talking about it altogether in 2016 after it failed in India over concern it violated net neutrality rules. Each year at Facebook's F8 developer conference, mentions of internet.org are fewer than fewer. At next month's annual conference, it's very likely audiences will hear nothing about it at all, but you will, guys, because now you're informed. And if you weren't before, now you are. See, this is where it gets hilarious. It's like, Mark, what are you doing? You're first concerned about this, and now you're concerned about that. Well, make up your mind about what the heck you were doing. Because now he's like, well, now we need privacy and encrypted stuff, because I got chewed out by the U.S. House and Senate, and it was really uncomfortable and stuff, and they were all really dressed up nice and stuff, and I kind of just showed up like an idiot. And they grilled me about a lot of stuff and made me look like an idiot, and, you know, I sounded smart about some stuff, but I sound like an idiot about others. But I don't really know how any of this works, and I'm kind of stuck with my hand in the cookie jar going, well, am I a utility, or am I like free internet then? It's like, well, okay, figure out what stance you're on then, Facebook. Are you an open platform for everybody, or are you a publisher mediating what type of content is spread on your platform? Careful what you wish for, and careful how you step on the toes of people, because it might just come back to bite you in the rear end. So, apparently, they just keep seeing through all this. The trolls have become even more trollish in their attempts to... No, I'm kidding. I'm trying to make something out of something that's not. But, yeah, people saw internet.org for what it was, and if you hadn't heard about it before, well, now you have. So, we have some gadget news. Behold, the first hands-on video of Samsung's unreleased Galaxy Fold. And no, we won't be playing this video, but we will be playing a couple more coming up. Regardless of whether or not it's a commercial success, no phone is likely to receive as much buzz as the Galaxy Fold in 2019, at least not until Apple announces its latest iPhones, of which I can guarantee you there's not going to be any mention of a Fold anywhere in it. I can also guarantee you that the iPhone that'll be coming out in 2019 won't even have 5G capability, and if it does, my mind's going to blow up. As one of the first mobile devices with a foldable display, Samsung's Galaxy Fold can be something of a niche project at first, but could help pave the way for the next major shift in phone design. But before it can do any of that, we need to get our hands on it. Despite the fact that the Fold is due out in just over a month, Samsung hasn't let anybody handle the device just yet. But that didn't stop YouTuber Phone of Time, who shared a video of the AT&T variant of the Galaxy Fold powering on and being used on Monday. It's the comprehensive hands-on video that we've seen to date. Now, all we've really seen in the Galaxy Fold up to this point are carefully produced marketing videos from Samsung and shots of the phone from the MWC. Now, what immediately stands out is just how prominent the crease in the center of the phone is when folded. Until we have a chance to touch the phone ourselves, it's not really possible to judge, but it's clear the technology to make a totally seamless folding fold has yet to be perfected, but Samsung's the first one out on the market with it, so everybody's going to be all hyped and buzzed. So there you go. Let's see, what's this video? It's about a 2-minute long full video. So you guys will enjoy. The link to this and all the rest of the articles will be in the show notes for this episode that you can find by going to technewsgadget.net/91. Or if you're listening on a podcast app of your choice right now, you should be able to just swipe up or swipe left, right, click for more details, and you should just have all the article links right there. All you have to do is tap on it and it'll load it up for you. The wonder of technology, right? Right? All right, let's see what's next. All right, so the news is finally out. It's finally been released. So remember Google hinting at this cloud streaming service and everybody wondering what's going on? Well, they finally dropped it. Stadia, a cloud gaming service launching later in 2019. You guys want to see the video? All right, let's see if we can load this video up for you. Really like that ending there. The whole thwing, the tone. Google is launching its Stadia cloud gaming service at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco today. Google CEO Sundar Pichai, who says he plays FIFA 19 quite a bit. I probably just murdered his name. I'm sorry, okay? I'm bad with names, okay? I'm a blonde. I admit it. Introduced the Stadia service during a special keynote this morning, describing it as a platform for everyone. He talked up Google's ambitions to stream games to all types of devices. Stadia will stream games from the cloud to the Chrome browser, Chromecast, and Pixel devices, and it will launch at some point in 2019 in the US, Canada, UK, and Europe. Phil Harrison, a former Sony and Microsoft executive, joined him on stage to fully unveil Stadia in his role at Google. Harrison says Google will amplify this game streaming service by using YouTube and the many creators that already create game clips on the service. Google previously tested the service as Project Stream in recent months, allowing Chrome users to stream games in a browser. Assassin's Creed Odyssey was the first and only game to be tested publicly using that service, and a public test finished in January. Now, of course, Google won't limit Stadia to just one game. Google demonstrated a new feature in YouTube that lets you view a game clip from a creator and then hit a Play Now button to instantly stream the title. Stadia offers instant access to play, says Harrison, without the need to download or install any games. At launch, games will be streamable across laptops, desktops, TVs, tablets, and phones. This is incredible. Google demonstrated moving gameplay seamlessly from a phone to a tablet and then to a TV, all using Google-powered devices. While existing USB controllers will work on a laptop or PC, Google is also launching a new Stadia controller that will power the game streaming service. And it looks like a cross between an Xbox and a PS4 controller, and it will work with the Stadia service by connecting directly through Wi-Fi. Interesting. To link it to a game session in the cloud. This will presumably help with latency and moving a game from one device to another. You can also use a button to capture and share clips straight to YouTube, or use another button to access the Google Assistant. Now, obviously, Stadia is able to be playable even if you don't have this controller. You just won't have the Google Assistant feature. Now, to power all this cloud streaming, Google is leveraging its global infrastructure of data centers to ensure servers are as close to players around the world as possible. That's kind of key, as lower latency is necessary to stream those games effectively across the internet. Google says it expects to support up to 4K at 60 frames per second at launch over an internet connection with approximately 25 megabytes of bandwidth, and is planning to support up to 8K resolutions and 120 FPS in the future. Now, I think they also demoed Doom Eternal, which was incredible that they're able to do that. And then other people were going around saying, well, this is a boon to YouTubers, especially live stream people who play on YouTube all the time, because now they just have the benefit of being plugged in right into it, and YouTube just becomes all the more relevant and important here. This technology is pretty cool. I'm glad they kept it under wraps for all of this. I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this exciting? Are you not excited by it? You don't like Google? Too much privacy-related stuff? I don't know. I like it. I like how technology is moving forward. It's like I've been waiting to go. You know, all of these inroads that I see going on with all these games being released on every platform, and Epic with their latest fiasco of pushing into areas and you know, getting Apple all upset about their App Store and Google all upset about their Play Store. Google went and said, hey, guys, check it out. You can play it on any device, any screen, any time, internet connection, in the cloud. Get this, the controller works via Wi-Fi. I mean, when was the last time you could do that with your Xbox controller or your PlayStation controller? Well, you have to be a certain, you know, it works via Bluetooth, because that's the technology in those consoles, probably even in the Switch as well. But you can only go so far from it, and Bluetooth has a certain radius, but Wi-Fi? You could be anywhere in the house with a good Wi-Fi connection going, okay, I'm playing it on a tablet, and I'm going to go upstairs over two flights and halfway down the hallway, and I'm going to flip it over to the TV. Doo-doo. Pretty cool. I'm liking this idea. Google is partnering with AMD to build a custom GPU for its data centers. It's a chip that Google claims will deliver 10.7 teraflops of power, which is more than the 4.2 teraflops of the PS4 Pro and the 6 teraflops of power on the Xbox One X. Each Stadia instance will also be powered by a custom 2.7 GHz x86 processor with 16 gigs of RAM. So, focusing on developers, Google also unveiled an impressive way for game developers to apply their own design styles to titles on Stadia. Now, it's a machine learning-based style transfer tool that developers can use to simply drop an image into the video frame of games and have it mimic the style throughout. It's kind of interesting. Stadia will also embrace full cross-platform play, so developers can enable cross-platform multiplayer and game saves and progression. Interesting. The news doesn't stop there, though. Google is also creating its own game studio for Stadia exclusive titles, Stadia Games and Entertainment. Jade Raymond, who recently joined Google, I just talked about this, as the VP is leading Google's push for its own games. Now, in case you guys forgot, Raymond is an industry veteran who has previously worked at Sony, Electronic Arts, and Ubisoft. Google says more than 100 studios already have dev kits for Stadia, and more than 1,000 creatives and engineers are already working on titles that will work on the service. Now, while Google unveils Stadia today, it has no details on exactly when the service will be available other than 2019. Google didn't reveal pricing or even how many games the service will have at launch, but it's promising more details in the summer. So, Microsoft, Amazon, it's your move. All right, a little tidbit of information here, because I know you guys are interested. The Verge was actually able to get hands-on with the Google Stadia game controller. And apparently the first results feel surprisingly great. Google didn't skimp on its first ever game controller. Google today took the wraps off its Stadia Cloud gaming platform, showing off a bold but largely untested vision of the future of gaming that involves distributing and playing software in real time over the internet. Surprisingly, the Stadia controller feels and looks great. Granted, we didn't get to try it on a live Stadia demo, but we did get to try hands-on with the same white and orange model that was used on stage during the reveal. It has a heft and texture similar to recent Xbox One gamepads, specifically the one that released with the Xbox One S redesign, but with the thumbstick layout of Sony's DualShock 4. Here are a couple images here. Look at that. You guys are interested. It features a USB-C port on top, a 3.5mm headphone jack on the bottom, and dedicated buttons to trigger Google Assistant-powered voice features and capture video of your gameplay. In a nice nod to gaming culture, images of the controller on Google's website show it may have the Konami code sequence as the barcode label on the bottom of the device below the headphone jack. You can even type the requisite commands into the Stadia website to bring up a 3D model of the controller so that you can expect it in your browser window. So, quite impressive. So all of that to say, you guys excited by Stadia? Or not really? I don't know. Let me know down in the comments section or on Twitter or Facebook. I'm not going to read this entire article, but you guys can certainly go ahead and take a look and let me know what you think. Oh, this button. Thanks a lot, stupid technology. You're supposed to be working. It just froze. Okay, so next article we got today is HP's high-res Reverb VR headset blows the screen door effect off its hinges. That dreaded low-resolution screen door effect that's dogged virtual reality imaging since its inception just got blown off its hinges by HP's Reverb VR headset. Announced Tuesday at HP reInvent in Houston, the Reverb boasts twice the resolution of its predecessor, 2160 by 2160, plus a wider 114-degree field of view. The Reverb is the highest resolution HMD, which is head-mounted display, that's shipping among major makers, the company said. That caveat of major HMD makers obviously excludes such smaller projects as Pixmax's AK headset. Even so, HP's Reverb will likely ship ahead of Pixmax's unit. So, the headset itself continues to be based on Microsoft Windows Mixed Reality platform. It still uses the standard Mixed Reality controllers, which link via Bluetooth and are tracked using Mixed Reality's Inside Out technology. So, kind of interesting. that the VR headsets are kind of getting better. Things are improving. I don't know. Maybe we'll have more AI games down the road. Let's see. Figured I'd just throw this in here for you guys. And for those of you who are interested in VR, well, what's obviously really helped it is the improved Bluetooth. The original mixed reality headsets counted on Bluetooth support and a gaming PC to handle the connection. HP discovered that subpar Bluetooth implementations were a weak link in the experience. By integrating a Bluetooth radio directly into Reverb's headset, HP can better guarantee a level of connection quality, which, you know, obviously now just brings it up that much more. So, let's move on to the last and most important gaming news of today. Okay, so the only gaming news that we have for today, because, well, okay, it wasn't the only one. The Stadia kind of was a tease as well. For those of you who play Overwatch, got some news for you. Baptiste is now live. The latest patch to Overwatch heralds the arrival of the combat medic Baptiste, who comes to the fight with a big gun, some sweet footwear, and a unique array of abilities that enable him to protect and heal allies from a distance. His biotic launcher launches a 3-round burst with significant damage output, while the Altfire mode launches grenades that will heal allied players. His regenerative burst ability will heal himself and nearby teammates over time, while the immortality field will keep allies from succumbing to the icy fingers of death. Exo boots enable Baptiste to clear obstacles that would be insurmountable to other players, and his ultimate amplification matrix doubles the damage and healing effects of friendly projectiles. The patch also makes a number of balance updates to the game. Damage taken by armor from damage over time effects has been adjusted to be more consistent and predictable, and damage boosting effects will be applied when projectiles are fired inside or instead of when they strike an enemy, meaning that the hero who fired it doesn't have to be boosted when it strikes in order for the effects to apply. There are also new audio effects that will make it easier to tell when hits are being buffed or nullified. They're also tweaking Pharaoh's rocket launcher, and Orisa's movement speed penalty while firing has been cut from 50% to 30%, and some other fixes. So there you are. While I could play the video, I'd rather have you guys go watch it for yourself and enjoy. And while seeing as we're running over time a little bit, I should probably wrap up. Oop, wrong button. Got him. I pressed the wrong button. I can't see. The microphone's literally in front of the button that I want to see what's going on. All right. So, with that, that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday, along with trivia. The Latest in Tech News is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, and everywhere else podcasts are heard. And if you want the video, all you have to do is head over to Facebook or youtube.com/technewsgadget. By the way, if we missed something on a show that you wanted to hear about, let us know on our Twitter and Facebook pages. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you could give us a 5-star rating and double check that you're subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick. Remember, for the latest in tech, gadgets, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.